Mode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the seventh of our Great Quest student webinars. And this is the first one of four that we're going to be doing on the labors of Hercules. Next slide, please, Astrid. Leone and Astrid are here to help me, and I really appreciate their help. And I see that we have several attendees. Some of you did give me your birth information, and it applies to what we're going to do tonight, so I hope you're going to be willing to share with us. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through three different labors. I'm going to go through the three different water signs, Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. And at the end of each sign, I'm going to ask if any of you have a moon, sun, or an ascendant in that sign. And then I would like you to please give me a little bit of information about how you think the myth for that particular sign applies to you and whatever planet it is that you have. So that's the way I would like to get some interaction from you as we go through this, and I would like to continue that through the rest of these webinars. Okay, big question. A lot of people ask is, why do we care about Hercules? Why do we need to study the myth? And the Labors of Hercules, the book, there's some very good information spread throughout the whole book. I mean, it's riveting from cover to cover. But at the back of the book, pages 225 and 229, I've paraphrased a little bit here. The progress of Hercules from the mental plane through the emotional plane and out into the physical plane manifestation, it shows us this synthetic picture of the work that is done by every single disciple who is a son of man and also a son of God. It is a work that can be arduous, slow, and it's carried forward under great difficulties. Often it is done in blind ignorance of the forces that are released and the results that are to be achieved. But step by step, the aspirant is led along the path of self-knowledge and development. His character and nature are tested and tried until the qualities which characterize the form can be transmuted into those which reveal the soul. Isn't that absolutely beautiful? Next slide, please, Astrid. There is a link, a definite link, between the myth and the sign. By combining what we know astrologically with the symbolic story, the tests of everyday life of a disciple are shown via the sign in which the myth takes place. Each sign is subjects the disciple to distinctive forces and certain tendencies. And when understood, when you combine these two things, the meaning of the tests emerge. How the moon sign labor describes the lesson of our past patterns that encompass the prison of our soul. This is our path of least resistance, the way that we've always done things and we fall back on it in times of stress. This is what we're trying to change, to overcome. How the sun sign labor describes the challenges our personality is meant to work on this lifetime. And how the ascendant sign labor points to the soul qualities we are to cultivate. So please take notes, remember this. So if your moon is in one of these three water signs, then you're going to talk about the lessons of your past patterns and the prison of your soul. If your sun is in one of these three water signs, then you're going to talk about the challenges of personality that you're working on this lifetime. And if you're ascendant, you're going to talk about the soul qualities that are being cultivated and how the labor of Hercules helps you do that. Okay? So there's implications for every single one of us as we read these myths. Next slide, please, Astrid. I only had four webinars to do to finish at the end of the year, so the most logical way for me to break it up was by the elements. Okay, so the elements, they basically give us the temperament of a sign. Fire and air signs, they are compatible. Both of them are masculine. That's yang energy. It's outgoing, expressive, and giving. The earth and water signs, they are compatible. They're feminine. That's yin energy. It's passive, it's receptive, and it's containing. Compatible signs work out their relationships through favorable aspects, the trines and the sextiles that we see in our chart. Earth or water signs don't relate well with fire or air signs. They usually have nothing in common, and they work out their issues via the harder aspects like the squares and in conjuncts. Next slide, please, Astrid. Exoterically, water is going to be emotional, it's nurturing, it's conforming, but it might be too sensitive. Esoterically, it's purification and identification. Cancer, it's the purified waters of experience and identifying with the masses. Scorpio is purified waters of the tests, and it's identifying with the hierarchy, the disciple. Pisces is a purified daily life and its identification with the spirit. They're feminine, like the earth signs, as I mentioned a minute ago. They represent the night, and they're related to the soft ray lines, the 2, 4, 6 ray lines. Next slide, please. I did a previous webinar series on the labors of Hercules where I did one labor a month. And one of the questions that I received at that time was Hercules a real person or just a myth? I thought I would readdress it here because, you know, to me this is an important thing. The ancient wisdom actually leads us to believe that all myths are based on some kind of an inner truth, although over the ages they have become distorted and the truth may actually be unrecognizable at this point. But it doesn't really matter because the archetype, that blueprint of the person that prevails to this day is what's important. This thought form has been built up and perpetuated for a very long time, and the truths of the lesson that we learn is certainly very real. So whatever your inner truth tells you about the myth or the man, his lesson is still valid. But was he actually really a real person? I personally choose to believe that he was. But then again, I'm one of those optimistic, glass half full kind of a people. So DK talks about him in several books as if he were a real person. And I'm going to read to you a little passage from The Destiny of Nations, page 38. Other and earlier sons of God presented diverse divine qualities and attributes, but in three of them a certain perfection of presentation was achieved, which, as far as this present world period is concerned, can never be surpassed. These three are Hercules, the perfect disciple, but not yet the perfected son of God. The Buddha, the perfect initiate, having reached illumination, but not yet having developed to perfection all the attributes of divinity. And the Christ, the absolutely perfect expression of divinity for this cycle, and therefore the teacher alike of angels and men. In these three, we have three instances of perfection which lies far ahead for the majority of the sons of men. In all of them, the sixth and second rays were controlling factors, with the first ray reaching full expression. In them, idealism, love, wisdom, and indomitable will stood forth in all their divine power. It might be interesting to know just what rays controlled these sons of God. Isn't it nice to have DK give us the rays of these people that we're studying? Hercules, the sun god, he had a first-ray soul, a second-ray personality, and a sixth-ray astral body. These potencies and energies suffice to carry him through the trials and labors of the disciple. The Buddha had a second-ray soul, a first-ray personality, and a sixth-ray mind. A very rare phenomenon to have a sixth-ray mind. It's not one of the typical ones. But hey, he was the Buddha. The Christ had a second-ray soul, a sixth-ray personality, which accounted for his close relationship with the Master Jesus, plus he had a first-ray mind. So see, they all had that first-ray, second-ray, and sixth-ray strongly within their makeup. These three all embody the essences of the spiritual life, and all of them were enabled to set their seal upon history and upon the hearts of men, largely through the potency of their sixth-ray expression. The Buddha and the Christ are still closely connected with and working in cooperation with the hierarchy. Hercules has gone over to the Shambhala Center, but he still works in a basic association with the Buddha, who is one of the forces that link Shambhala and the hierarchy. So, there. In my mind, that answers the question. Next slide, please, Astrid. The presiding one asked the teacher where Hercules is and how he's faring. The teacher told the presiding one that Hercules was still pondering and reflecting on what happened with the Gemini labor. Remember, we're starting with Cancer, so he's already done the Aries, the Taurus, and the Gemini labor. The presiding one sent the teacher to send him on to his next labor, designed to evoke wise choices, to listen for the inner voice that comes from his heart, and to awaken the inner side of life via wisdom and these right choices. All the labors, they're going to start this way. Hercules faces the presiding one or his teacher. In the foreword to the labors of Hercules on page 17, DK tells us that there are variations on these myths. Just depends on the book that you read. But by one account, Jupiter actually subjected Hercules to the power of Eurystheus, who was the ruler of Argos. And I'm probably not saying some of these names right, but please have mercy on me. So he was required to obey his every demand for 12 years. And once completed, Hercules would then become a god. These, of course, are the 12 tests of man as he comes closer and closer to his true spiritual divine nature. Later on in Labors of Hercules, DK refers to Eurystheus as Hercules' master. So this might be interpreted as meaning that he could be the head of an ashram or possibly a senior disciple. The presiding one at the first two initiations, we're told, is the Christ, and the world teacher, the head of the hierarchy. For the third and subsequent initiations, DK tells us the presiding one is Sanat Kumara, the lord of the world and the head of Shambhala. So keep that in mind, that every single labor starts with the presiding one. And in this particular case, Labors of Hercules, page 1 and 2, there's a quote here I'm going to read. Dim is the light at first, selfish the trend of human aspiration, and dark the deeds resultant. Slowly men learn, and in learning pass between the pillars of the gates time and again. In other words, lifetime after lifetime. Dull is the understanding, but in the halls of discipline, found in each section of the circle's cosmic sweep, in other words, the zodiac, the truth is slowly grasped, the needed lessons learnt, and the nature purified and taught until the cross is seen, that fixed and waiting cross which crucifies the sons of men stretched out on the crosses of those who serve and save. From out the mass of men, one man stood forth in ancient days and caught the great presiding elder's watching eye. He who eternally presides within the council chamber of the Lord, D.K. is talking about Sanat Kumara here, he turned to one who stood close at hand, the teacher, and said, "Who is that soul upon the way of life whose light can now be dimly seen?" And quickly the answer came, "That is the soul who, on the way of life, experiences and seeks the clear light which shines from the high place. Let him proceed upon his way, but watch his steps." And so Hercules is basically assigned a mentor, a teacher to watch and guide him as he completes his labors. He's gone through all of them time and time again, learning a little more each time. But this time is different. This time he's going through the final tests of each labor, proving that he has mastered them all. Next slide, please, Astrid. Hercules stands in deep silence, observing the landscape around him. He sees the shrine of Apollo and on a nearby hill, the fawn that he is hunting. As he watched, he heard the voice of Artemis, goddess of the moon, warning him that the doe belonged to her and he was not to touch it. Then Diana, goddess of the forest, claimed the doe as hers, and Artemis and Diana argued back and forth, each claiming possession of the doe. Hercules, still standing between the pillars of the gate, he listened to their quarrel and wondered about the two maidens, and then he heard another commanding voice telling him that the doe belonged to the shrine and neither maiden. And so he listened to this new inner voice, and he was instructed to rescue the doe and take it to the shrine. So he started on this journey. Artemis and Diana were watching him, and they hampered him as much as they could whenever he got close to the doe. They deluded Hercules. They sought to throw him off as he chased the doe from point to point. For a year he followed that doe from place to place, catching glimpses of it only to find nothing time after time, until finally he found it, weary and sleeping beside a pool of water in the forest. He quietly crept up on it and shot an arrow hitting the doe's foot, wounding it. As he drew close, he picked the doe up in his arms, and he held it close to his heart while Artemis and Diana watched. He cried out. The doe was his. He'd won the hunt. But then he heard that other voice again, the voice of his teacher reminding him that the doe belonged to no one and commanding him to carry it to the shrine. Hercules asked why, when the doe was his. He carried it close to his heart, and the teacher told him, as a son of God, he dwelled within the shrine of God, and he needed to bring the doe there for everyone else who shared the shrine. So Hercules takes the doe to the holy shrine of Mycenae, but he had second thoughts about the doe being his prize from the hunt. Another argument ensued between Artemis and Diana, and all three at this point were claiming the doe was theirs until Apollo, the sun god, spoke from within the holy place, claiming the doe for the holy shrine. "Why," asked Artemis, "can Hercules enter the temple, but Diana and Artemis could not, even when he had killed the doe?" And Apollo answered that it was because Hercules bore the doe in his arms, close to his heart, and he left the doe in the holy place for the others to share. In other words, he did right by that doe. And Hercules, returning from his tests, passed through the gate again and found his way back to the teacher of his life. Hercules tells his teacher the task was fulfilled, that it was simple except the length of time that was needed. He said the doe was in the holy place close to the heart of God, but also still close to Hercules' own heart. "Go look again, O Hercules, my son, between the pillars of the gate," said the teacher. And sure enough, beyond the gate on a hill, stood a new fawn. Hercules, puzzled, asked why the fawn was back. This time, it was the presiding one who answered him. Again and yet again must all the sons of men, who are the sons of God, seek for the golden antlered fawn and bear it to the holy place. Again and yet again. His teacher told Hercules that his fourth labor was over, but that the nature of the test was a frequent search for the dough. Next slide, please. Cancer is the last of the four preparatory signs. Whether considering involution of the soul into matter or the evolution of the aspirant as he struggles out of the human and or returns to the spiritual kingdom. So first there was being equipped with the faculty of the mind in Aries, and he learned mental control with desire in Taurus, where his spiritual light begins to grow, and having arrived at his essential duality in Gemini, then so he could realize that there were two parts of himself. Then the incarnating human enters through birth in Cancer, through the gate into incarnation, into the human kingdom. Cancer is a mass sign, and the influences bring about the formation of the human family, the race, the nation, the family unit. For aspirants, these four signs, these four preparatory signs, prepare his equipment and show him how to use it. In Cancer, he gets his first touch of that more universal sense, which is the higher aspect of mass consciousness. Equipped, therefore, with a controlled mind, capacity to register illumination, and the ability to contact his immortal aspect, he intuitively begins to recognize the kingdom of spirit, and he is ready now for greater work. So three words summarize the self-awareness or consciousness aspect of the evolving human being: instinct, intellect, and intuition. Cancer is predominantly the sign of instinct, but instinct has to be lifted up, and when it has been thus transcended and transmuted, it manifests as intuition, symbolized in this myth by the doe. Next slide, please. Hercules was sent to capture the doe, something that was elusive and difficult to secure. But as we've seen, there is no success for the aspirant until he has transmuted that instinct via the intellect into the intuition. Then instinct is subordinated to both. There's no sharp distinctions between the various aspects of man's nature. They're all varying aspects of consciousness and response to the environment and the world in which the human being finds himself. Instinct is the consciousness of the form, and it's the mode of awareness of the form. Artemis, the moon, rules the form. Man is also rational. He can analyze, criticize, and possesses a mind and the faculty of intellectual perception and response, which opens him up to new fields of awareness. Diana, the huntress, claimed the doe because to her, the doe is the intellect and man is the great seeker, the hunter before the Lord. But the doe had another and more elusive form, and Hercules, as the aspirant, also looked for this. For a life cycle, he hunted, represented in the myth as a year. Finally, he captured it, and following his spiritual intuition, he carried it into the temple where it was claimed by the sun god Apollo. We're told that the battle is still going on between Apollo, who knew that the doe was intuition, Diana, who knew that it was intellect, and Artemis, who thought that it was only instinct. The problem of all disciples is to use the instinct correctly, in the right place, in a proper way. He must learn to use the intellect and through it become conscious of the world of human ideas and research. He must learn to carry the capacity of it into the temple of the Lord and there to transmute it to intuition. And through the intuition, become aware of the things of the spirit and of those spiritual realities which are neither instinct nor intellect. and again the sons of men must recapture the spiritual realities upon the endless way. Next slide, please, Astrid. Okay, this is a little recap of the sign Cancer. Most of this is in the back of Labors of Hercules, starting on page 211. I've added a couple of other things to it. It is a water sign. It's mass sensitivity. For the average man, it's mass identification. For the disciple, it's service for the masses. Negative traits, moodiness, over-emotionalism, suspicion, positive traits, intuition, loving compassion, protectiveness. Esoteric concepts, developing that intuition and that sensitive response to the environment. Psychic development, lower and higher. Obviously, we want to work on the higher senses and transmuting that instinct to intuition. Polar opposite is Capricorn, an earth sign. And we have to consider those opposites, Cancer and Capricorn. They work together in tandem. The rulers of Cancer, the Moon and Neptune, the keywords from the angle of the form, let isolation be the rule, and yet the crowd exists. And from the angle of the soul, I build a lighted house, and therein dwell. Okay, at this point, what I would like to do is... we're done with the Cancer labor for right now. So I would like to ask if anybody here has Cancer as a moon, a sun, or an ascendant, and would like to share how they feel that this labor of Hercules applies to them. I'm going to change it over to me. I don't see any hands, so my volunteers, then I'm going to go with my helpers. Let's look at Astrid. Astrid has a sun in Cancer. Astrid, would you like to share with us how this Cancer labor applies to your personality sun? Astrid, are you there? Are you on self-mute? There you go.
Yes.
Real low.
I got. I can relate to this. I can relate to Diana. I, in the past, have been very much like Diana in that I take things personally. And she believed that the dough was hers. And she was willing to fight for it. I used to, and still can to a certain extent, take things very personally and protect myself if I feel it's needed. So the sensitivity is still there. As far as the mind and the intellect is concerned, yes, I believe a lot of instinct has been transmuted into intellect, and I would like to think it's being transmuted now into intuition. But time will tell, of course. Thanks for you.
Well, thank you. And that was very good. And you know, being your sun and being your personality, I liked that you talked about both the positives and the negatives there, because that's basically what we're doing with our sun. We're working on elevating the less desirable characteristics of our personality and trying to bring them in line with our soul. Okay, well, thank you. Let's go on to the next one now, because I'm still not getting any volunteers over. There we go. Okay, just 1 minute, Rachel. Let me do one more over here, and then thank you, Rachel. I'm going to call on you next. Okay, Leonie, would you like to talk about your Cancer sun?
Yes, I can really identify with the timidness of the doe, especially when I was young. And I was, and still am sensitive today, but I was very hypersensitive as a child and very, very timid and would never come out of my shell at all. And if anyone, I felt threatened, running away was easy for me. And so the doe flitting around and everywhere, I can really relate to that. On a level of consciousness as well, my mind, emotions, or my emotions really affected my personality. And so, if I felt threatened, my mind would not, I was enabled then when I was young to stand and reason through my mind. My ego personality would dissolve into the emotions, and I was would just hide away and flit away and push too hard. Then I would come out with the cancer nippers. So a little bit more like Diana than coming out and fighting. So that's really how I identify. It's the timidity, the flitting away, the avoiding trouble. But if anyone pushes me to the wall, then I would certainly come straight back at them because cancer actually is one of the war signs, and the crab's nippers can be really sharp and threatening if anyone should back them into a corner. I can relate to that.
Yeah, it sounds like the overprotectiveness that can come forward with that. And also, you did you were describing that overanalyzing of the intellect that needs to be raised up to the intuition. So, thank you, thank you. I appreciate that. That really is helpful in the description there. Okay, let's see. Oops, there we go. Okay. Please go ahead, Rachel.
Hi.
You have the ascendant in Cancer.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Oh, great. Okay. I think it's helped me or supported my personality to move away from the instinct to the intellect. Developing the intellect has helped me recognize just how immersed I was in my emotions. I've been very emotional. I used to just do everything by feeling. I never used to think things through. And I think now it's helping me to listen to to move away from those emotions and listen to the inner guidance and develop the intuition. At the moment, I tend to intellectualize and rationalize the impressions and experiences, which I think prevents the development of my intuition. So that doe still eludes me quite a bit.
But it's the emerging soul that you can actually feel and relate to there. So, thank you very much for sharing that. Okay, let me go back to Astrid as the presenter so that we can go on with Scorpio, unless anybody has any questions before we move on to. Okay, Astrid, you should be the presenter again. I don't see your screen yet, though. Okay, next slide, please, Astrid. No questions on Cancer before we move on to Scorpio? Okay. And so we see here that this labor starts the same way they all do. The labor itself is defined by the presiding one, and the teacher passes the instructions on to Hercules. He is to destroy the nine-headed hydra of Lerna. As Hercules waits, his teacher gives him his instructions, including this final word of counsel. We rise by kneeling. We conquer by surrendering. We gain by giving up. Go forth, O Son of God and Son of Man, and conquer. Next slide, please. So, that stagnant swamp of Lerna was unbelievably rank. The stench polluted the atmosphere for miles around. When Hercules approached, he had to pause because the smell was just so overpoweringly bad. The oozing quicksands were a hazard, and more than once Hercules was almost sucked down. At length he found the monster's lair in a cavern of perpetual night, but the hydra lay concealed. By day and night Hercules haunted the treacherous area, waiting for the hydra to emerge. Finally he thought to dip his arrows in the burning pitch, firing them into the cavern so he could see. The hydra, its nine angry heads breathing flame, emerged. Large and ugly, the monster seemed to be made of all the foulest thoughts conceived since time began. The hydra sprang at Hercules, but he stepped aside, and he clobbered one of the heads, but no sooner had this horrid head fallen than two grew in its place. Again and again Hercules attacked the raging monster, but it grew stronger, not weaker. Then Hercules remembered that his teacher had said, "We rise by kneeling." So casting aside his club, he knelt, he grasped the hydra with his bare hands, and he raised it upward. Suspended in midair, its strength diminished. The purifying air and light had their due effect. The monster, strong in the darkness and in the swampy muck, lost its power when the sun and air fell on it. The nine heads drooped, and as they lay lifeless, Hercules perceived the immortal head. Then he cut the one true head of the hydra, still fiercely hissing, and he buried it beneath a rock. Next slide, please. So, like I said before, there's variations on this myth, and for the first time in our study of Hercules, we actually no longer have the statements by the Tibetan or Alice Bailey to guide us with the kernel of truth beneath the various legends. The myth for Scorpio, as well as the remaining four labors, is finished in this book by Francis Merchant, because Alice Bailey died. In esoteric astrology, though, DK tells us that there were nine heads that represented the nine tests in Scorpio, and in Labors of Hercules, that is explained to us. The lair is our subconscious shadows, and patience is needed for us to find them in the hidden caverns of our mind. And what we have there are all of those accumulated evils, mistakes, failures, bad thoughts, from all of our past lives that need to be exposed to the wisdom of the soul. Hercules had to see the hydra as one monster and not a beast with nine different heads. As long as he sought to sever the heads one by one, he remained unsuccessful. When we finally dealt with it as a unit is when he gained victory. Our soul is immortal, and at times our personality may seem like it is too. It dies with each life, but it's resurrected with each new incarnation, right where we left off. Continuing the process of evolution and serving as a conduit for the soul. In the myth, Hercules cut the head and buried it under a rock, and we're given the phrase hidden under the rock of the will to consider here. We can see it as the immortal head that's being the concentrated energy and thought forms that created the monster in the first place, and they still remain. But now they're purified and redirected, but the power must be continually controlled and rightly channeled, and then the will of the soul can use it as a source of power. I hope you guys can hear the fireworks that are going on outside my window here. It's just a couple days after our 4th of July celebration here. So, in other words, the will of the soul here is the one who's bearing the form. It's bearing the personality, and it's keeping it from rearing its ugly head again, finally putting it to rest as the nine tests of the personality have been passed and the disciple has learned to channel that inherent energy rightly now. So what are these nine heads of the hydra? Each head represents one of the problems that beset the advanced person who seeks to achieve mastery of himself. Three of the heads symbolize the physical appetites associated with sex, comfort, and money. The second group concern the passions of fear. hatred, and desire for power. And the last three heads represent the vices of an unillumined mind, pride, separativeness, and cruelty. So establishing right human relations and right relationships with the soul and the environment are actually the key factors here in redirecting and transmuting these nine tests. We see a lot of problems that are arising out of the misuse of the energy known as sex, the love of comfort, luxury, and outer possessions. The pursuit of money as an end instead of a means enthralls the lives of countless men and women. Thus, this task of destroying the first three heads continues to challenge the powers of mankind thousands of years after Hercules accomplished his extraordinary feat. As a matter of fact, it's pretty rampant right now, isn't it? The three qualities of character that Hercules had to express were humility, courage, and discrimination. Humility to see his plight objectively and recognize his own shortcomings. Courage to attack the monster that lay coiled at the roots of his nature. And discrimination to discover a technique for dealing with this mortal foe. Hercules invokes a brighter light than that of the analyzing mind. He seeks to raise his problem to a higher dimension, not to stir endlessly in the cesspool of the subconscious. Endeavoring to see his dilemma in the light of the soul, he confronts it from a new angle of vision. And by doing so, he breaks the Hydra's grip and eventually subdues the beast. He admits light into the dark recesses of the subconscious, grapples with the monstrous forces that wallow in the slime, and overcomes the enemies of his own making. So this is a cleansing process that that's going on here. And now he's ready to embark on the next labor, which he's going to have to demonstrate his ability to control the powers and potency of the mind. Of course, the next labor that follows the Scorpio labor would be the Sagittarius labor, and we're not going to be talking about that today. But just to keep that in mind. Okay, next slide, please. Because remember, he's going through these in order, each sign, Aries to Taurus to Gemini to Cancer, etc. Okay, these tests are about extremes, the good side versus the evil side, just as all pairs of opposites are to be at one in this great sign, the sign of the conscious disciple who has and integrated all of the different aspects of himself. Here we must be careful to distinguish between ordinary people who may not yet be on the path and disciples like Hercules. We all go through these tests, but it's a matter of whether there are final tests or whether we're still fighting with the lessons and have more to learn. This monster dwells within each of us in the caverns of our mind. In the murk and the mud of unlit mental recesses, it can be quiescent at times, or it can burst forth in a frenzy. Its existence is not easily discovered. A long time passes before we realize that we are nurturing and sustaining this monster. The burning arrows of flaming aspiration must be discharged before its presence can be revealed. The mind is related to fire, and the final tests were mental in nature, destroying illusion once and for all. So the fight begins, only to find out if you destroy one head, what, another grows in its place. So every time a low desire or thought is overcome, another one can take its place. But Hercules does three things. He recognizes the existence of the Hydra, he searches patiently for it, and then he finally destroys it as a consolidated unit. So discrimination is needed to recognize that existence, patience to discover the lair, and humility to bring the slimy fragments up to the surface so that they can be exposed to the light of day. As long as Hercules fought in that bog amid the slime and quicksand, He was unable to overcome the Hydra. He had to raise the monster into the air, in other words, to translate his problem to another dimension in order to solve it. In all humility, kneeling in the mud, he had to examine his dilemma in the light of the wisdom and in the elevated atmosphere of searching thought. From these considerations, we may gather that the answer to many of our problems come only when that new focus of attention is achieved and that new perspective can be established. This is actually the 4-3 problem of humanity, achieving this harmony through conflict, of facing the problem of finding yourself in battle with two different sides of yourself. Until you can step back, gain that new perspective, and then everything shifts around you, and you're able to translate the problem to that other dimension. Okay, Scorpio is the labor that from certain angles has engrossed us and will engross us for a long time, because unlike Hercules, we have not yet triumphant over that Hydra. Most of us are occupied with the futile methods that he tried at first. This primarily is humanity's problem, but individually, we are so profoundly concerned with our own evolution that we forget that larger view. If we're going to climb the mountaintop in Capricorn, we must lose sight of the personality and begin to function as souls. The true Scorpio test never takes place until one is coordinated. The mind, the emotional, and the physical nature are all functioning as a unit. And then the man passes into Scorpio, where his equilibrium is going to be upset and desire is going to seem rampant when he thought he had gotten rid of all of it. The mind, which he was quite sure was beginning to control his personality, doesn't seem to be functioning. So as we study Hercules, what we're doing is really studying ourselves, aren't we? So Hercules had to demonstrate to himself that the form is simply a channel of expression whereby he contacts a greater field of divine manifestation. The personality is not to be killed, not to be stamped out. It is to be recognized as a triple channel of expression for three divine aspects. All depends on whether we use that triple personality for our selfish or divine ends. The great illusion is the utilization of that personality for selfish ends. So to sum up this whole story in the sign Scorpio, the self is determined to kill the little self in order to teach it the meaning of resurrection. Next slide, please, Astrid. Okay, let's go through really quickly the Scorpio attributes, and then I'm going to open it up to students who have a Scorpio moon, sun, or ascendant. Okay, so the quality is conflict, test, trial, triumph, crises, reorientation, turning point in the life of humanity or the individual, the triumphant disciple. Negative traits: jealousy, secretiveness, resentfulness, manipulating. Positive traits: determination, fearlessness, intuition. Esoteric concepts: the mind is taking control, the battle that is waged is mental. The conflict of duality overcomes desire and illusion. Polar opposite is Taurus. The rulers are Pluto and Mars. Keywords from the angle of the form: let Maya flourish and deception rule. And from the angle of the soul: warrior am I, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. Okay, oops. Over to me. Make presenter. Yes. Okay. Who has, let me see, Leonie, would you like to start us off with telling us about your Scorpio
Yes,
ascendant?
would you like to put, oh yes, there it is. Yes, having two water signs as primary signs is very interesting, and clearly I understand that it is my astral nature that is requiring to be purified in this life. And so in my young life I really identified with the sun in Cancer, the personality sign, but as I got into my teens and into my 20s, then I really felt a shift in consciousness moving towards Scorpio. And the way that I understood this, or the way I experienced it, is that the timidity, which I spoke about with regard to Cancer, really started to change to quite a warlike nature, and aggression is something that really used to come out of me. And the reason I was so aggressive for a while, and still can be, I think, if I'm pushed hard enough, is that for a long time I was so timid and never stood up for myself. And then and so when I did start to stand up for myself and try to hold my ground and cut off the heads of people who I perceive are attacking me, this was a new experience for me. And so I was unbalanced, as we all are when the personality is not balanced. I was really unbalanced in that and used to get lost in my battles. And so really can identify with Hercules lopping off all those heads, and they kept growing back. But when you're in the battle and the bloodlust is up, and all you're seeing is that it's the Mars fight that you're in, you're unable to see the greater picture. You're just fighting for survival, trying to destroy the opponent. And so you're just looking at the head and trying to cut that off. But after a while, of course, you realize nothing is getting solved. Or if you're starting to think, you realize that nothing is getting solved in the battle. If you're very good at killing off the opponent, or you think you've killed them off, all you've done is destroyed one head, and the person or the situation will come back at you in another form. And so I could see when I started analysing myself when I became an astrologer that I could really see how I was always fighting, constantly fighting, and physically my opponent would change, but the same battle was always being fought behind the scenes. And so this is my experience of the Hydra. And when I really started applying spiritual disciplines and read about the labor of Hercules, and how he was told to raise his consciousness up, for me, what I did was start to lift my consciousness out of the emotional morass and the battle it was in, and lifted it deliberately into the clear light of mind. And when I could do that and lift up and look down and over the situation, what was happening, then I got that clear view, which of the soul, of, and could see clearly what I needed to do to solve a problem, rather than when you're still fighting in the bog, all you want to do is kill your opponent so you can survive. But up in that clear light of mind and of the soul, you see many things. You see what the purpose of the whole experience is all about, what you are learning, what your strengths and your weaknesses, and what you need to do to bring about a satisfactory conclusion so everyone wins, and you don't leave any resentful opponents behind who are going to sneak up and try and kill you at some later date. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course, at some later date. That's my experience.
Thank you. That that reminds me. I want to show, I don't see any volunteers, so I want to show everybody my husband's chart. Like you, Leonie, he has two. He's got the Scorpio and the Cancer, but he has them reversed. It's the Scorpio sun, the Scorpio personality issues that he's dealing with, and the Cancer ascendant. And remember, there was something in there that I mentioned in as astrologers were told in esoteric astrology that before you look at the chart, you really need to know where the person is on the path so that you are looking at the right rulers, you're looking at the right level of interpretation. Okay, so I have to tell you that I don't believe that my husband is on the path. I think he's still working mostly at the personality level, and he's doing it at a higher level in some respects, not in all. And I see that mostly in a lot of the things that Leone was just describing about the Scorpio in his personality. What I see, and there's a lot of that. Intuition, there's a lot of the secretiveness, there's a lot of the tests. I think one of his favorite phrases is, "If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all." And that's just part of the tests, which usually turn out to be our greatest lessons. I will say that although he's not working at the soul level and the soul purposes, that he does have this very nurturing, very loving Cancer ascendant. So he's working at, some of the higher levels. There's not total negativity, although sometimes it's pretty rough to have this much Scorpio in your house. But that's just a matter of my perspective of where he stands on the path. So I hope that's helped you out. I still don't see any hands raised for volunteers to help to share. I do have one of you with a Scorpio moon, but that's okay. I think we've can move on now. Yeah, thanks. Andrea says, "What a stellium!" Yeah, yeah. He brought every planet with him when he came into incarnation in Scorpio. So, and me being a Leo, wow, yeah, that works real well with us. Okay, so if there's no questions on no more questions on Scorpio, then I'm going to turn this back over to Astrid and we'll move on to Pisces. I took a little bit longer with the first one to get into the rhythm and routine of this, but now I'd like to move a little bit quicker through this last one. So hopefully you guys will have a little more time for questions. Okay, next slide, please, Astrid. All right, and here we go. The capture of the red cattle of Giron. Again, the presiding one. From the sacred council chamber, the great presiding one revealed to the teacher that the will of what must be. The will is a Ray One attribute, and it's connected to Pisces through Pluto, the esoteric ruler of Pisces. Lost he is, the presiding one tells the teacher, and found, dead, yet vibrant with life. The server, which is Aquarius, becomes the savior, Pisces, and homeward turns. Notice how effective the words are here, conveying much more than just their outer meaning. All of DK's books are like this, which makes rereading them so very rewarding, because the more we learn, the more we can pick up on the word clues that he gives us everywhere. So the teacher called for Hercules, and he gave him his instructions. Proceed to that dark place called Eurythia, where great illusion is enthroned, and where Giron, the monster of the three heads, three bodies, and six hands, is lord and king. Unlawfully he holds a herd of dark red cattle. From Eurythia to our sacred city must you drive this herd. Beware of Eurythion, the shepherd, and his two-headed dog. One caution I can give, the teacher added slowly. Invoke the aid of Helios. And through 12th the gate, the Son of Man, who is the Son of God, departed. Next slide, please. So within the temple of Hercules made his offerings to Helios, the god of fire in the sun. For 7 days he meditated, and then a favor was bestowed upon him. A golden chalice fell upon the ground before his feet. With the safe protection of the golden chalice, he sailed across the tossing seas to Eurythia far away. It didn't take him long to find the grazing cattle, and they were guarded by the shepherd Eurytion and that double-headed dog. The dog attacked him when Hercules approached, but he killed him with one blow. Then Eurytion, the shepherd, was fearful of the brave warrior who stood before him, and he asked that his life be spared, and Hercules conceded. Driving the cattle before him, he turned towards the sacred city. Not too far into the process, he saw this distant cloud of dust that rapidly grew larger. Surmising that it was the monster Geryon and had come in mad pursuit, Hercules turned to face him, and the fire that he was breathing from all heads at once. So Hercules let an arrow fly that seemed to burn the air as it was released, and it struck the monster squarely in the side, and it pierced all three bodies at once, killing the monster. Hercules returned to his task to herd the cattle towards the sacred city, but he faced difficulties again and again because the cattle strayed, and he'd have to leave the herd to hunt them down. Across the Alps he drove the cattle and into Italy, and as he proceeded along his way, he'd stop whenever he found some kind of injustice, and he dealt with whatever evil he found there, riding the balance as he went on his journey. At times he lost his way, he had to turn back, he had to retrace his steps, but he journeyed on, and though he was weary by this most exacting labor, he returned home at long last, and his teacher was awaiting him. "Welcome, O Son of God, who is also a Son of Man," he greeted the returning warrior. "The jewel of immortality is yours. By these 12 labors have you overcome the human and put on the divine. Home have you come, no more to leave. Upon the starry firmament your name shall be inscribed as a symbol to the struggling sons of men of their immortal destiny. The human labors ended. Your cosmic task begins." And from out of the council chamber came a voice that said, "Well done, O Son of God." Next slide, please. So Hercules received his orders, and Pisces is a sign of obedience, to bring the cattle across land and water to the sacred city. So here we see the power of words again. Land is matter, its form, and water is emotions or desires. Hercules sailed to the island in the golden cup, and when he arrived there, he climbed to the top of a mountain and spent a night in prayer. In other words, he prepared via meditation, invoking the soul. Then he killed the monster, but he did not kill the shepherd. The symbolism of the red cattle is the lower desires. It's an outstanding characteristic of humanity. These are guarded by a shepherd, which is the mind. The two-headed dog represented the matter aspect and the psychic nature. The mind can still be the shepherd of the cattle, but the two-headed dog, the psychic emotional nature, and the matter aspect had to be deprived of their power. The shepherd still had power, something a person in incarnation will need to develop the mind. Because we use the mind to interpret the spiritual energy from the soul. Next slide, please. I want to take a little detour here and talk about just what it means to be a savior. You know, from the angle of the soul, the key words for Pisces are, "I leave my father's home, and turning back, I save." Hercules, he sees humanity owned by a monster, and the personality, the mental, emotional, and physical bodies need to be united, but they were not yet under the influence of the soul. Jesus, he was a human who was in rapport with his soul, and like Hercules, he became that beacon of light for humanity. Both of these men held their minds steady in the light of the soul. And even as aspirants, we redeem the lives of the elementals that form the bodies that we have. So the appropriation of our vehicles from certain elemental matter is, you know, those are who we're redeeming. As we raise our consciousness, we flood them with that same consciousness, and we raise them up as we go. So transforms them too. Next slide, please. So the sign of Pisces rules the feet, and hence the idea of treading the path and attaining the goal has been the underlying spiritual revelation of the Piscean age. Pisces is also the sign of death in various aspects. The death of the body sometimes, or maybe the death of old patterns and habits that have or should come to an end. An undesirable friendship might cease. Devotion to some thought form that has outlived its usefulness. Something ends so that you can start something new. DK actually tells us that there are three signs of salvation in the zodiac. Leo, where the word goes out to the human being, work out your own salvation. The man is determined to stand on his own legs. He becomes egocentric and assertive. And they're all necessary to salvation because only by trying out his own equipment is he going to arrive at the point where he gets a broader perspective. The second sign of salvation, we're told, is Sagittarius. It's a sign of service and silence, where the assertive man, tired of talking of himself and pushing himself forward, he loses sight of himself in the goal, and he silently begins to serve. And then we come to this third sign, Pisces, that of the world saviors. As we talked about before, this labor actually brings Hercules that most exalted symbol, the Holy Grail. In Light of the Soul, page 227, we're told that the object of human evolution is to bring the Christ force into full manifestation upon the physical plane through those lower vehicles that are serving as the receiver and the container for the life of God. So Hercules' mission is done, and now he's ready to move onward and upward, because we can't stagnate. No matter what initiation we're at, there's always another one. So he was tested over and over again as his lower nature was refined and redeemed. His personality gave way to the soul, and he became a server and then a savior. He was finally told by his teacher that his human labors had ended and his cosmic task now begun. Next slide, please, Astrid. And here we go with the wrap-up of Pisces. The quality, duality, fluidity, instinctual consciousness, mediumistic. The intuition can be dormant. It can also be the death of the personality, the release of the soul from that captivity of the form, and eventually the Christ, the world server. Negative traits, escapism, idealism, oversensitivity. Positive traits, imagination, kindness, compassion, intuition. The esoteric concepts, the lower psychic powers are then transmuted into their higher spiritual faculties. Mediumship into mediatorship. Clairvoyance into spiritual perception. Clairaudience into mental telepathy. Death of all attachments and liberation of the soul for service. The polar opposite is Virgo. Rulers are Neptune, Jupiter, and Pluto. From the angle of form, the key word is go forth into matter. And from the angle of soul, I leave my father's home, and turning back, I save. That's a voluntary reaction there. Okay, I'm going to switch it back over to me, and we'll see if, keep doing that, we'll see if anybody who has Pisces as an ascendant, sun or moon. Let me start here with here we go. Roberto Assagioli, and I'm probably saying his name wrong, and I apologize. He had a Pisces sun, and he had a Cancer ascendant. I don't know how many of you are familiar with his work, but he was one of the disciples in the Discipleship in the New Age books. It was speculated that he was taking the third and the fourth initiation in his particular life. So he was definitely a disciple working on those final tests. He was an Italian Jew during the World War, and he was persecuted for it. He was put in prison for it. Yet he still managed to have a psychology practice and to develop this psychosynthesis, which some people actually describe as very similar to esoteric psychology and the influence of the seven rays without actually putting it in those words. Other people say no, he developed this much before he got involved with Alice Bailey and the work that they were doing there, but he was very close friends with the Baileys. So we see that he had this savior complex for his son, for his personality, and Cancer for his ascendant, that compassion there. Let's see, what do we have? The intuition to come up with this psychosynthesis and to do it at a time when, you know, he was doing some of this when he was actually in jail and some of it when he was living in a cave hiding out because of the war going on. Very difficult time, very difficult tests that he was going through. So that is one person who had a Pisces personality and a Cancer sun. Does anybody else have... would like to share with us maybe about their Pisces moon? Thank you very much. Let me find her. There we go. Okay, please go ahead, Rachel. You're on self-mute. There you go. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Let's see if I can do this. Like I mentioned before, I used to feel my way through everything, so I used to use those words, I feel, to decide everything I did or how to be. In the times of crises, I couldn't think. My mind would go blank. I'd swim around without any direction. There really actually wasn't anything there to think with. So I had to develop my mind so that I could overcome the emotional drama that I used to get caught up in and all that sensitivity, and approach crises and problem solving cognitively instead of feeling my way through or simply reacting to everything. I used to fold in on myself and see everybody and everything as enemies, and I would just try to escape them whenever I could. So working towards an integrated personality, the Holy Grail, by purifying the lower nature, capturing the red cattle to reveal the soul. I now kind of aspire to be of service more than wallowing in my escapism and dramas. So, and during that, I've noticed that things that used to really matter to me have fallen away and are not really important any longer. I find that I need and want a lot less than what I used to. That's it.
Well, thank you. So you're actually using the intuition of your ascendant intuition from the soul, and you're listening to it here with your personality to help you raise that above the personality aspect and more in line with the soul then. So you have the same setup here that Roberto, I'm not even going to try his last name again because I'm going to mess it up again. But, he, I would say, was probably on a much higher level than you. But still, you have that same energy working in the same fashion that he had it working. And that's what we do. We go through these tests and trials over and over again in each sign, and we learn more each time, and we get more under control, and the soul takes more control, and we get used to listening to it more. So thank you very much, Rachel, for sharing that. Okay, that's about all I have. Did you guys find this helpful, talking a little bit about what the meaning of the myth was, and then working with the individuals in the chart and how we saw that working out within our chart? Raise your hands if you guys found that helpful. No hands went up, so I guess nobody found that helpful. There we go. Okay, thank you. All right, so let me put it back to Astrid, because she's the one who has the other slides up. Last slide, please, Astrid. Our next webinar is going to be the 7th of August, and we're going to be doing the fire signs.
I see that Carsten has his hand up there.
Yes, I think that was when I asked to put your hands up if you found it helpful. So did you have something to say, Carsten? Or was your hand just up from earlier?
I just raised my hand to both of us.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, thank you. Okay, okay. So 7 August, it will be on the fire signs, Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. Okay, so good night, everybody, and thank you for being here. Let me unmute you all real quick so everybody can say goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Gail. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody, and thank you, everybody, for participating. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.